Hello, everybody. Welcome to All Have Another. I'm your host, Lindsay, and I'm so happy you're here with me today. This is a show where I bring on friends who have inspiring, motivational, encouraging stories, and we just have a fun conversation. Today, you are listening to episode 10, and we are talking with Chrissy Vasquez. Chrissy is the executive director for Back on My Feet Indianapolis, and I met her probably around 5 years ago, and she is a really awesome person. She tells her story of completing a full Ironman, and I can't promise you won't get teary listening to how it happened and how determined she was to finish. We also talk about the positive and the negatives she's experienced racing in the back of the pack and the lessons she's learned and carried with her in her job and her own life through her racing experiences. Chrissy tells it like it is with a no BS approach, and you'll learn she is kind, caring, and the kind of good friend that we all want to be and the kind of friend we all want to have. So I'm so excited for you to hear this episode with Chrissy. I had a lot of fun inviting her into my home and having her sit down at my dining room table and just share her story. So yay, it's going to be awesome. Real quick, let's get you guys subscribed and would you rate and review the show? That would be awesome. I'm going to read my friend Lauren. Lauren lives in Bloomington. She says, "This has been such a great addition to my weekly podcast. I'm not a competitive runner, but still take something away from every episode and find myself genuinely interested in all the guests. I love Lindsay's questions and feel like she is really in touch with what her audience would ask if they were there for the conversation. Fridays just got even better. I love that so much because the last thing I want is for someone to think this podcast isn't for them if they're not a serious runner or if they're not a runner at all. We don't just talk about running. This is all the good stuff. If you are a small business and you'd be interested in advertising on the show, send me an email at lindsay@lindseyhine.com. That's L-I-N-D-S-E-Y at lindseyhine.com. And if you have any suggestions for who you'd like to see on the show, shoot me an email there as well, and that would be wonderful. I'd love to bring on people that my audience wants to hear. So thank you guys so much for listening today, and we'll go ahead and get started with Chrissy. Okay. Hey, Chrissy, how are you?
Good. How are you, Lindsay?
Good. Thanks for coming over.
Thanks for having me.
So Chrissy is the executive director for Back on My Feet Indianapolis, and we met about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah. We met at the Carmel Marathon Expo. I think it was the first year in 2011.
Okay.
And so I was getting ready to run my third half marathon of the year. I just started running, and you were at the table selling Back on My Feet merchandise. And I said, "What's this? I've seen your shirts." And so you told me what it was all about, and it really resonated with me, having a best friend that's in recovery and just newly to running and how much it had transformed my life in just a couple of months. And then just giving back in community service. Mm-hmm. So I saw Joe Kendrick running his first half marathon, that race, and I loved all the people that were with him. And then what really struck me is I was doing Tri Indy, and you were on the corner, and you cheered for me. And I'm like, who is this person that knows me? I don't know anybody in triathlon. And I saw that it was you. I think you sent me a message afterwards saying it was you. And that just really stuck with me. Here it is a couple months later. We don't even know each other, and you were cheering for me. So that's what prompted me to really start looking into Back on My Feet more. I thought I was a slow runner, so I didn't think I had a place in the organization. So I started fundraising so that way I could do my own thing, but still support what was going on.
Little did you know that runners of all speeds have a place in that organization.
Absolutely. So true. So
that's funny that you say that, because Glenn, my husband always makes fun of me for cheering for people at races. He's like, "Oh my gosh, you need to calm down."
No, keep going. At the mini this weekend, I kind of put craps on my race and went and cheered at mile 12 with Dave Josie. And that was so much fun.
I saw him.
Yeah.
I ran the mini. So I don't know. You might have not been over there yet. We started in wave two, but Dave Josie was standing on that corner talking to someone, and I was like flagging him down because he didn't see us. But he was talking to some guy, so you weren't there yet.
Yeah, he's an institution on that corner race, I think.
He is. The only thing I'm surprised is that he doesn't run it.
Yeah, I think it's so close coming off of Boston that he's still in recovery mode.
Yeah.
You know how much he enjoys supporting other people. So.
Right. That's so true. Okay. So since we've already been talking about Back on My Feet, will you just tell everybody what Back on My Feet is, what you guys do?
Sure. So Back on My Feet uses the power of running to combat homelessness, and we provide essential resources for housing and employment while also providing community for our members.
Okay. So I used to work for Back on My Feet. when I worked at a community center on the near east side of Indianapolis, and I was getting into running a lot, and I always said I wanted to stay in the nonprofit world, but I wanted to do something that had to do with running. Mm-hmm. And I heard about this organization they launched in Philadelphia, and I was thinking, there's no way they'll come to Indianapolis. Like, that's ridiculous. We're such a small, big city, right? So I don't know how I saw it, but I saw a press release, and so I immediately contacted and sent my resume, and anyway, ended up getting the job, and it was just kind of a fluke almost, because it was a random thing that they launched in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Were we there sixth or seventh city? We were pretty early on. Mm-hmm. And it was because of a good relationship they had with White Lodging.
Absolutely.
Here. Yeah. But anyway, gosh, that was such a huge part of my life for a couple years. And then I decided to stay home with our first son, Marshall. But you started in the organization as the executive director. I was the communications director. Mm-hmm. You started when I finished, really.
Like right. Well, months. I was a volunteer for 2 years because I helped launch Team Manchester. Uh-huh. I was the team leader there. And so I would come run before I went to my job. And that was something I never thought I would do, because I never thought I was a fast enough runner to mm-hmm. be in this running club. But you're so right. There's a room for everybody. We have every pace. 7-minute miles, people walking 17-minute miles trying to get faster. So there's definitely a place for everybody. So it was interesting to be able to see it from a volunteer experience mm-hmm. for 2 years before I stepped up into this role. I think it really helped me better prepare for how to do this role. I mean, this role is all about fundraising mm-hmm. and telling the story and being thoughtful of our members' experiences while connecting people from the community. So it's definitely a big job, but it's very rewarding.
And if you're local to Indianapolis, or if you live in any major city that has a chapter, you will see Back on My Feet at so many different races. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're everywhere. And I always, even though I'm not involved in the organization in person or anything like that right now, anytime I'm at a race and I see a Back on My Feet shirt, I'm like, yeah, Back on My Feet.
You're
and
such a great supporter.
So
oh, they do. They feel like celebrities.
Yes.
You know, a lot of our members have gone their whole life without really feeling like they matter or anybody cares about them. So to be at a race where there's 35,000 people like the mini, and to have somebody recognize their shirt and know what they're out there doing, that means a lot to them.
Well, and most of, so one of your facilities is a veterans facility, mm-hmm. and then the other one is Wheeler Mission downtown.
Correct.
So what is the, like, if someone were to say, what is your main demographic of guys or women, you can have women mm-hmm. too, in the organization, like, who are the people you're serving usually?
Oh my goodness. So the
or
faces,
building relationships with,
yeah,
I should say.
I would say the faces are just as varied as the reason why people are homeless in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, we have guys that are 21 just coming back from active duty. We have some members that are chronically homeless and have just been living one situation to the next. We have women, we have men, all ethnicities, all backgrounds. And so we really serve everybody. I would say the average age, though, is probably between 35 and 50.
Okay. Yeah. And, well, what was it? It must have been 2011. I got to run a marathon with one of the members for the first time, their first marathon. Mm-hmm. And it was probably, I've ran 13 marathons, and it was like one of the most emotional, awesome Aww. Experiences in my marathon running, you know, that I've ever done. So it was with James.
Oh, yeah. It's so awesome. We had a member, Leah, who last year finished the mini in 4.5 hours. This year she finished 3.5.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
And it was so incredible to see how strong she looked at the finish, and she did it all herself. She didn't have anybody out there pacing with her.
Oh, my gosh.
And so just so proud of the strides that she's made. And that's what's so touching about this uh-huh. organization is you get to see people come out that maybe have turned their back on society because they feel like they've been dealt a bad card, and see them come out of their shell and start really appreciating the volunteers and appreciating the experience and watching them come. Leah was somebody that was struggling to keep 18-minute miles, and here she was. She paced herself 16-minute miles for the mini, which we know is difficult sometimes with how many people that are out there.
Oh, yeah.
The track's always fun. So, you know, it's really rewarding to be able to see those experiences and to see our members watch the volunteers come out and give to them, and so then they want to pay it forward and help other people.
Yes.
And help other members that come through the program. We have a tremendous amount of alumni right now that are running with the program, because I do think that they see the importance of mm-hmm. that schedule in their life and the benefits that running has, but they also want to help the members coming after them to really help, you know, foster them and help mentor them.
Mentor them. Yeah. And that's the huge thing too, is I think when people are hesitant about volunteering with you guys, what am I going to do? Run mm-hmm. with someone who's experiencing homelessness, just run next to them. But like, it's all about building a relationship with them.
Absolutely.
And that's what it is.
There is nothing. So we circle up in the morning. We run at 5:45 in the morning. It's dark. And so when people come to that circle, you literally, if you don't know the people, you don't know who came from the shelter and who came from mm-hmm. a house in Carmel. And that's the power of running, is that it levels the playing field. Mm-hmm. At that moment, when we're circled up, it doesn't matter if you have a house or a job. What matters is you're out there trying to make yourself better. And we all have problems, and they're of different scales and magnitudes, but we can all relate to each other through running.
Yeah, that's so true. Okay, so I want to talk about, we could talk about Back on My Feet forever.
We could. It's an amazing organization.
We both could, for sure. I want to talk about your story a little bit, your background. When did you start running? Why did you start mm-hmm. running? What does that look like?
Sure. So I was never athletic growing up. I played soccer and field hockey, not very well, but I was on those teams. I played golf in high school, was a decent golfer, but never running. Oh God, that was the worst part of gym. Like, I still have flashbacks of, you know, having to run 2 miles and uh-huh. being the last one to finish and things of that sort. So it definitely was not a fun experience growing up. But around 2009, I had kind of reached a point in my life where I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was extremely overweight. I was inactive. I was not happy. That was in the times when my best friend was in the throes of his addiction. And that had sent my world in kind of a tornado as well. And so I just woke up one morning. I had been working with a trainer, but had been doing it half-assed. Really, half the time I would oversleep my sessions. So once again, I had overslept a session, and she called me and she's like, "What is going on with you?" And I started crying and I said, "I'm so sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I have no idea where to start." So she said, "Let's start meeting on a weekly basis. Let's get you paired up with a nutritionist." And so for the first time, I really started making strides to make change. And so one of my friends in Georgia saw that I was doing this, and she was like, "Hey, there's this half marathon in Miami Beach. Let's go run it. It's the first year." And I thought, okay, whatever. You know, I'm never going to, I can run a mile right now. There's no way I'm going to get to a half marathon, but I'll go ahead and sign up. I'll probably end up ditching out and just cheering everybody on and making it a girls' weekend. And so as I continued over the next 4 months, training for a half marathon in Indiana in the winter when it's your mm-hmm. first one sucks. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't want to run outside because I was unsure of my footing on the ice and snow. Running inside on a treadmill is just hell on earth.
Yeah.
So it was a struggle for me. But when I made it to the start line in March, I was extremely proud of where I've been. I was 40 pounds lighter, didn't love running, but didn't loathe it. And so as I went through that half marathon, the first 3 miles sucked. I was like, why am I doing this? Every part of my ankles, feet were in pain. I had a friend stick with me. Miles 4 through 10, I was loving it. We were chugging along at a slow pace, but a good pace for me. And then the last 3 miles was so tough. I was like, I am never doing this again. This is the dumbest idea ever. And as soon as I got to the finish line, I'm like, I need to sign up for another race. Just the love-hate relationship that I have with running. I have moments every once in a while where I do love running, but mm-hmm. I still wonder how people like yourself love it so much.
Well, I don't always love it so much.
So just remembering that everybody sometimes has bad runs, but
that's
how I got started. And so that year I did 4 half marathons.
Oh, wow.
Which I think was a lot to bite off.
That is a lot.
But stupid me, I liked it and didn't really know why I liked mm-hmm. it because it was miserable. And then the next year I was looking for something different, so I decided to get in a triathlon because I had a friend doing her first sprint. So she talked me into buying a hybrid bike and come do this, you know, sprint at Carmel. Mm-hmm. And so I did it, and the first race looked like a joke. I had my baseball cap under my bicycle helmet
because
I was like, I need to save time in transition by putting this baseball cap on now so that way I can just take the helmet off for the run. I was probably one of the last ones to get out of the pool. I was on this hybrid bike. There's a terrible picture that they took of me with my baseball cap and my helmet's not even fitting right. And I have a granola bar because, you know, after that 400 meter swim, you gotta refuel.
Uh-huh. I think I've seen that. I think you posted that picture one time.
I think my bike splits were like 12 miles per hour, if that. And then the run, I'm pretty sure I crawled all 3.2 miles. It took me close to 2 hours to complete it. And I was one of the last people in to finish it. And again, just like the running, I didn't love it, but there was something that drew me to it. And so I eventually started working up my distances, and I was training for a full Ironman in 2013. And so I think I've completed, because I've had several DNFs in there, I'm not ashamed anymore to talk about those because I think it's all part of the experience. You have to fall down to get back up. So I think I've completed 3 or 4 half Ironman distances, and then I've completed a full Ironman distance.
So I love that you're not afraid to talk about that, because I think people find shame.
Oh gosh, yes.
In DNF.
In
the DNF.
So for whatever reason, when I started with the whole triathlon thing, not to skip ahead, but you know, I decided let's start blogging about this, because surely I'm not the only person that's had these ridiculous moments. And when I was going to get my first wetsuit, when I was trying it on, it was like a mix of the Friends leather pants incident with Ross and being a sausage in a wetsuit. And so that's how the name of my blog was created, Sausage in a Wetsuit. And for the first time in my life, I put on the internet every emotion I was feeling, from the embarrassment of how could I let myself get so big that I can't fit in a wetsuit, to I can't believe I'm letting this guy that I know but not really that well zip it up because I can't zip it up myself, and the shame and embarrassment with that, the shame and embarrassment of having a hard time finding something that fit, the thought of why am I spending $250 on something like this. I mean, it was just the whole gamut of emotions and putting it out there. And it was one of those things I decided to share on Facebook. Being new to triathlon in 2012, it was my second season. And I had joined a triathlon team, and I could not believe how much the members of those teams responded. I think I had like 26 shares on Facebook. I'm like, who are these people? Like, yeah. I'm writing about the ridiculousness, how embarrassing.
Yeah.
And they found empowerment of it. And I will say that I kind of got defined as, you know, everybody was like, oh, hey, sausage in a wetsuit. And it was something I had named myself, but it became like who I was known as.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's been a double-edged sword. I don't think people was ever meaning it to be mean or demeaning, but it's been a double-edged sword, because I guess when you step outside of things, you see, like, our members, I see how inspiring their stories are. They don't feel like they are.
Right.
It's the same thing with me. I don't understand why anybody takes interest in anything I have to say about what I'm doing, but for whatever reason, it resonates with people on different levels.
Well, I think of a lot of it, too, as someone who might be struggling with their weight and things like that. They think I can't do it. Mm-hmm. And so they read your story, and they're like, well, she can do it. Why can't I do it? You know?
I hate that cliche so much.
But I know.
If anybody can
but
do
it's
it.
Powerful.
But it's true. It's cliches. You know? We were just joking about that this morning on the run, about how true cliches are.
Oh, yeah, I know. And it's like, everything happens for a reason.
That was exactly what we were talking about on the podcast.
Yep. And there's so much truth and so much BS to that statement in general. But, well, it's true, though, because someone who might be out of shape, or might be a smoker and just like never worked out, they might look at someone who's running a 4-hour marathon and be like, well, you know, she's super fit. And
that's how I look at it. I'm like, I could never qualify for Boston, but I could.
You could. And anybody can get started, but a lot of people are probably scared to.
Yeah. It is scared to take that leap. And you know, with triathlon, you have to wear the skin tight clothing that's atrocious and leads nothing to the imagination.
Oh, no.
And so I will never forget the first season I went out and did a couple sprints and then ended with an Olympic. I always had these high aspirations, and I'm not even sure where the heck they came from. But so I remember when I went out and did my first outdoor swim triathlon at Eagle Creek, there's 600 people there. I don't know a single person in the crowd. And I've always been somebody that knows a lot of people. I think just because I'm friendly and somewhat codependent, want to help people. So it was just really weird for me to be in an experience where I was looking around and I didn't know a single person. And not only do I not know a single person, I am in these god-awful skin-tight clothing that shows everything. I do not look like a single person out there. Everybody's, you know, who you would expect to be able to run a 4-hour marathon and things of that sort. So it was definitely very, very intimidating. And normally something like that would scare me away. But there's something about this journey through triathlon and even running that I'm like one of those whack-a-moles. I keep coming back up and I don't know why, because it's like I'm a glutton for punishment. I guess maybe I'm hoping that one day I'll be like Leah and just start taking off these crazy time and, you know, start getting better. I never, ever see myself as somebody that's going to be age group winner, but it would be nice to move from back of the pack to kind of average.
So I want to talk about being a back of the packer.
Mm-hmm.
What is that experience like? I mean, I think you get a lot of support from people, but you also get some rude people as well. Yeah. What? Tell me about that a little bit.
It's a double-edged sword. So I've run more than 20 half marathons now. right? But I can tell you that every time I'm out there doing a half marathon and someone passes me, they'll be like, you're just great for being out here. And they, it's like they think it's my very first one and good for you. And I used to explain, oh, no, I've done this and this. And then finally I just say, you know what? Thank you.
I've done this more than you probably.
Exactly. So I just say thank you and kind of move on. And so, you know, they're meaning it from a good place, but when you have certain perceptions about yourself, you definitely take it from, you know, not a positive place every time. You know, it's kind of a double-edged sword too. There was one race I was in, and it was a triathlon in Chicago, and I was struggling on the run. It was a hot day, and there was a very heavy woman, probably twice as big as me, on the corner cheering, which I thought was really awesome because I know before I had gotten into that, there's no way I would show my face at an event with all these fit people. And she just said, you know, thank you for being out here. You inspire me that people can do it. And it was just one of those things where anybody can do it. And it's amazing how triathlon and running, there's such a supportive community, but then there's also a small pocket of elitists that, you know, what are you doing sharing this course with me? Or there's always the argument of, okay, so you didn't technically finish the Ironman in a full, in the allotted time of 17 hours. So are you really an Ironman?
Yes, you are.
Who cares?
You did the distance.
You know, but I can understand people that, you know, take that stuff seriously. You know, I don't know. It's just like the whole Boston Marathon. Are you here on a qualifying time? Or are you here on a charity bib? And, you know,
people are way too uptight.
Yeah. So, I mean, to each their own. Right. To each their own. If somebody wants to get a tattoo for something they didn't do or did do or whatever, or wear a shirt from a race they participated in or not, is up to them.
Well, I'll tell you what. I registered for Grandma's Marathon for June because I thought I was going to run it. And I'm not going to be able to run it this year. And they just sent me this really cool zip up for their 40th running or whatever. I don't care that I'm not running it. I'm going to wear the zip up because I really like the zip up.
That's awesome.
And if someone asks me if I ran, I'll say, no, I actually wasn't able to.
But I got the zip up. Exactly.
But I paid for my entry, so I'm going to wear this jacket.
Exactly. It's so funny how people get bent out of shape about certain things. And to each their own. I try not to judge other people because I don't want other people judging me, but it's hard. It's human nature. But kind of back to the back of a packer. So when you're at the back of the pack, it's hard because you don't see a lot of people. So you're like, oh my God, I'm the only one out here. How far behind am I of everybody else? You get to the water stations. There's not a lot of water. Sometimes you're down to the last table. Sometimes they've already started pouring cups out and here you come along. There was one race I came by and they're like, oh, we didn't think we had anybody else out here. And they'd already poured all the cups out. So that's kind of discouraging.
Which is important for race directors to know those things so that they know you are
absolutely
out here to the
last person. If you're outside of the cutoff time that they've published, I certainly understand that. But if you're within the time still, you know, that's very discouraging. You know, again, it's double-edged sword. You get some really encouraging people and then you get some people that try to say things to be nice, or you get people that won't even look at you. I've been in races where I'm walking and somebody in front of me is running and the people, oh, way to go, runner. And then I come by and they don't say anything.
Ew.
So you get, you know, everything. And when it comes down to it, you have to be out there for yourself.
Right.
You can't be competing with anybody else. I'm not getting a paycheck doing this. I never will.
Right.
So it has to be my own personal battles and my own personal challenges to myself. I will say that I take it very seriously about the example I set to our members. And so using the mini as an example, I threw in the towel, which I've never done in a half marathon, but I did on Saturday. And there was a little pain of guilt, like, no, this is not the example I want to be setting to them. But then also realizing I got to be good to myself. I can't beat myself up. And I've been doing that too much lately and I need to stop because I don't want our members beating themselves up.
Right.
So we all make decisions under the circumstances that are presented to us at the time.
Well, and like you said earlier, it's not being ashamed of having to do not finish because of whatever came up.
Yeah. I mean, that's the crazy thing about Ironman, especially the half and full distances, is that anything can happen on race day.
Oh my gosh, anything.
You know, I was in a race and my nutrition bumped off my bike and went down the creek. And I'm like, okay, well, how am I supposed to complete this race without any nutrition?
Right.
So things happen. Some days it's your days to race and other days it's not. Some days you shine and some days you really struggle to get to the finish. Every finish, and honestly, every race has a place in my heart because I've taken a lesson from that. Sometimes lessons come in crappy paper. Sometimes they come in beautiful paper, but they're all lessons that are equally valued.
So, okay. So you started Ironman Arizona. Were they both Ironman Arizona?
So in 2013, I did Ironman Arizona, and I was raising money for Back on My Feet. Okay. And raised almost
$18,000.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just blew my mind. I think a lot of people were like, you go, girl. I would never be able to do this.
Right.
And the fact that you're not scared to go up against these people
right.
that can do an Ironman in 8 hours
mm-hmm.
And sharing the course with them. And 2013, it started off as a good day. The swim was good. I made the cutoff. The cutoff's 2 hours and 20. I was out of the water, I think, right under 2 hours. So I was super excited.
It's great.
My philosophy on triathlon is a day I don't drown and I make the cutoff is always a good day. So that was good. And then going out on the bike, I was a little bit slower than I wanted to be, but I got off the bike. And so I was having fun up to that point. And then the run, I just, for whatever reason, fell down a deep hole that I couldn't climb out of.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got worse. And I remember being probably mile 14. And at this point, I think my coach had texted some people that were out there and like, get on the run with her. She's not going to make the cutoff. You got to see what's going on and pick up the pace. And so they got out there and I'm just like, this is miserable. And I was starting to have some GI issues from the bike. So none of my nutrition was staying in me. I was visiting every portalette twice on the aid stations. The aid stations are about a mile apart. And I just remember around mile 14, I was totally incoherent. And I just remember thinking, God, please let me trip and fall into the lake. Like, I want to be out of this race so bad, but mm-hmm. I don't want it to be my decision.
Right.
I want either there to be an intervention or somebody tell me I need to stop. And one of my friends kept doing mental checks, asking me mm-hmm. what date it was, how old your mom, you know, things like that. And he said, you were always coherent enough. You may be dazed, but you were always coherent enough. So he said, I was watching for your safety. And then somewhere around mile 17, my friends were like, you are not going to make the cutoff unless you pick up the pace. And so I started running probably faster than I had on the course to that point. And I can hear the golf cart behind me. And it's dark at this point, so I can see the headlights. And I'm like, fuck, they're running behind me. So they're coming behind me. I can hear them taking timing chips of people that I'm passing. I've got to get to mile 19 by a certain time, or mile 20, actually, by a certain time. And so I got to mile 19, and there was a guy waiting for me. And he said, you know, you haven't made the cutoff. We need to take your chip. So I stopped. I said, come get it. I peed all over it. You take it off my ankle. I can't bend over at this point. So you want it, you take it.
How many hours in are you at this point?
I think it was about 15.
Okay.
15 or 16.
So you've been going for 15 hours.
Yeah. I was like, take it. And he was like, you know, you need to end your day. We're taking your timing chip. And ironically enough, mile 19 is exactly across from the finish line. So there's a big Tempe Town mm-hmm. Lake. I would say it's probably like a quarter to a half mile wide. And so you can see the finish line. You can certainly hear
people were finishing. You could hear seven miles ahead.
Yeah, you could hear the announcements. You couldn't hear it coherently, but you could hear, uh-huh. you know, Mike Riley calling people
uh-huh.
in. And so he's like, you need to stop. You've been out here for 15 hours. Once we close this course, which is happening right now, there's going to be no more aid stations. There's no medical. And I had some friends with me. And little did I know, one of my friends had been recording this on her iPhone the whole time. And so here I am, faced by the decision I have to make. And so I asked my friends, do you think I should go on? And they said, the decision's totally up to you. And I'm like, Christ, I wanted them to tell me you need to quit.
Right.
So at that point, I was like, no, let's go. We're 7 miles away.
Right.
I didn't come all this way to stop 7 miles short. 140.6 miles, 7 miles is just a small divot in the mm-hmm. day's mileage. So we kept going. I had two great friends that ran ahead and stocked up on water and some snacks mm-hmm. at the aid station. I will say that once the timing chip was gone, my adrenaline was gone. I was in so much pain. I felt every ache and pain. I think it took me 2 hours. Well, it had to have been longer to go the last 7 miles because mm-hmm. I was snail pace.
Right.
Like barely trudging along. I was beating myself up because I was thinking all that time when I was dazed, if I was even running a minute a mile faster, that I wouldn't be in uh-huh. this situation. But you can't change that. So my friends walked with me and I'm still hitting up. Thank God they left the portalettes out because I'm still hitting every
right.
portalette. But it looked like a ghost town. They had taken the tape off the ground. The signs were gone. The aid stations were gone outside the ice machines and the portalettes. Like, it was incredible how quickly they picked up that race.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can hear people finishing. It's getting close to midnight. You know, the last people are coming in and it's not going to be you. And nobody's going to be at that finish line. But to me, it was about getting to the full distance
mm-hmm.
that day. Even if it took me till 7 o'clock in the morning, like, that was the point of it. So we come around to mile 22 and there's probably about 30 people waiting for me. All my friends and family came to walk the rest of the way in with me. And one of my friends who I'd met through my triathlon journey, she ended up being on the chocolate milk team. Chris Ann.
Oh,
I think you got me.
I met her through like Twitter.
Yeah. So you got me connected to Chris Ann. Yeah. She was on the chocolate milk team the year Heinz Ward did it. And so we met each other in Kansas and became, you know, good internet friends, as you call them. So she was there for the race. And so she ran ahead. I didn't know this, but she ran ahead and told everybody at the finish line, there's a finisher coming. So when I got there, there was literally 100 people waiting on the last quarter mile, which is uphill. And I told my friends, I said, I feel like I owe it to everybody to run. So I ran the rest of the way in. And when I got there, I mean, besides being 100 strangers who didn't know me from Adam, my friends and family behind me, they had rolled the carpet back out. Because at this point it looked, they're in the process of tearing it down. It's about 1:30 in the morning. But they had rolled the carpet back out. They had put up a string for a finish line. And there was Ironman employees cheering me on, waiting with a medal. And so I went through the finish line and, you know, my friend David Downey, who's an announcer with Mike Riley, declared me an Ironman. So I'm like, that's all I need. Ironman employee called me an Ironman, but they had a finisher's medal hat and shirt for me. They even saved a bottle of champagne for me.
Oh, fun.
So it was really awesome. And I think that it just spoke so much to what the journey to get there had been. All the way from raising so much money to back on my feet to showing our members that the finish line that you set for yourself is where you need to get there. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you crawl, you know, however you get there, you need to get there, and regardless of what obstacles come your way. And then I was thinking about it, you know, had I just run through the finish chute, don't get me wrong, it would have been incredible to hear Mike call my name and the lights and the cameras and the roar of the crowd. I mean, at midnight and close to the end, it's just like this rumble that you can't even imagine. It just shakes through you. So emotional. But then I look at it and I'm like, you know, to finish the way that I did, I think it just really honored what we do at Back of My Feet. Mm-hmm. And that's who I was running for that day. It's certainly like my journey of DNFs, because earlier in that year I had a DNF at Kansas. And because of that, I got to meet some of the Ironman employees. And so they kind of took me under their wing. And so now I go to any race and I get VIP treatment. Mm. This year at Arizona, I was hanging out at the finish line, standing next to Mike Riley as he announced people. But then, you know, it's also caught the eye of, there's a group called the Iron Band. And so they sang a song about me. So there's a music video out there about me, which is kind of embarrassing.
We'll have to put that in the show notes. We'll look that up.
Which is pretty funny. Because of my journey and the tenacity, I got to do a TEDx talk.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so that
was... Is that available to watch?
You can Google. If you Google taxicab to Ironman.
Okay.
Because it was at Lilly, there were some copyright issues, so it's not on the TEDx site, but you can Google it and see it.
There's a link. Who's posted it?
It's on my YouTube channel, actually.
Okay.
Which is an issue show.
Because I've actually never seen it.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say. I was super excited. I remember when you were prepping for it and stuff.
Yeah. So it's pretty much a lot of what we talked about. Yeah. But then it comes back and ties it into Back on My Feet. Because that was the point, to bring some awareness. But it was incredible because that day, I think there was 15 or 16 speakers, CEOs from other companies. And I was the first person of the day.
Okay.
Three total to get a standing ovation.
Oh.
So it was very...
Well, and TED Talks are very serious, like how you have to format
everything. Oh my gosh. It was a crazy experience in its own, getting ready for that.
What was the prep work for that?
So, ironically enough, I probably prepped about 3 weeks, because we have our big fundraising birthday bash in April, and the talk was in May. So I'm like, I'll have to worry about this after the bash.
Right.
But they needed slides from me and they needed a title. So I did that stuff before I did the content. And I think because it was my story and it was something I was so passionate about, I ended up watching the Diana Nyad TED Talk that she did about swimming.
Oh, yeah.
The from Cuba to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And just something in that one really gave me the groundwork for how I want to lay mine out. And so I think when you're up there talking about something that you're passionate about and that you live through, it makes it a lot easier. It was a challenge because you had to talk about reinventing yourself. So I had to come up with some rules of reinvention. But once I started laying out what I was talking about, those rules kind of percolated to the top of what I wanted.
How many people were there?
Ooh, I think there was 250. People had to compete for tickets, but it was broadcast to more than 5,000 people worldwide.
Were you nervous?
I was. So it was funny because I was the first person to kick off reinventing ourselves. It was reinventing our company, our brand, our customers, and ourselves. And I was the first person to do ourselves. And I had to go after the guy who created Schoolhouse Rocks. So he's up there. The guy's like 90.
Now, what is that?
It's the children's show that does song to teach about. You know, what's a bill and what's the, you know, legislature and things like that. So he was up there singing some song about like math and abortion. I don't know. It went over like 20 minutes. And so on one hand, that made me really nervous because I was like, I just want to get this done. On the other hand, it kind of like, it's all right. You know, life's all about laughing at yourself and, you know, nobody knows my story like I do. So I really don't have any reason to be nervous. And so I went out there and, you know, I have to say it was almost like an out-of-body experience because I completely, for the most part, to my notes, nailed it, which really shocked myself. But it's funny, the very last line that I closed with, I completely forgot. My mind went so blank. So there's, in the video, there's like this dramatic pause, which to me felt like forever. And I'm sitting here thinking, what is the last line? Come on. But everybody said they thought it was just for impact.
Yeah.
So I was really...
Did you remember it?
Yes, I did. And I delivered it. So it just made it sound like a dramatic pause. Uh-huh. But even
which people do in TED Talks.
Yeah, exactly. So even the former speechwriter for Lily came up and he was like, you just knocked that out of the park.
Oh, I love it.
So it was really cool. And it's sometimes I still pinch myself, like, why is my experience that special? And I think it's more just about the honesty that I put out there. I put out the good, the bad. I don't put out on my blog as much as I want to. I struggle with my blog sometimes because when I have something really good to blog about, I don't have the time to sit down and do it.
I understand that.
And then when I have the time, I'm like, I have nothing to say. So as you can appreciate. So, but I enjoy, sometimes I'm scared to hit the publish button because I'm like, maybe I'm crossing the line of too much information. I recently put something about depression and I actually published another blog after it and publicized that before I did the one about depression. And then knowing that May was National Mental Health Awareness Month, I decided, you know what, I'm going to be brave and post this. And so sometimes it's scary to hit the publish button. But as you shared your story, there's somebody out there that can benefit from
that.
And if it changes one person's life, and like you said, it's so therapeutic to be able to get it out there and talk about it.
And sometimes you feel like, I don't even think anybody's going to read this or care about this. And you know what? Oh, well, if they don't, if it's making you feel better and it's your therapy, I mean, that's kind of half the reason I write anything.
Absolutely.
I wanted to read this, though, because I read your post on that before you got here. You guys, I'll link her blog onto the show notes so you can just check it out and browse around. But the post on depression, she finishes it up and says, if you're at the bottom of the pit, don't get up. Look for the light and don't be afraid to jump for the hand wanting to help you. If you're out of the pit, extend your hand to help someone in need. It gets better. Ride the wave. The pendulum will come swing back the other way. You've still got work to do, people to help, and life to live. And what I love about that is I feel like, and in my experience, when I've battled like bouts of depression, my issues are usually with anxiety, health-related things. I find that if I do go help someone else or invest my time that I'm spending worried and anxious about things in my life on somebody else, it pulls me out of it without even realizing it. And even if that's just for an hour in that day, if for that hour in that day I'm not focused on myself and not focused on obsessing over whatever I'm scared about, I'm better for it. And then that person is better for it too, probably.
Absolutely. I think I kind of suffer from the other side of the pendulum, to use that, is I want to help everybody else before I help myself. You know, I joined a fellowship called Al-Anon to support me when my friend was going through addiction, because I was like, if I don't get some help from somewhere, we're going to kill each other. So I started going to Al-Anon, and I just celebrated 9 years in the program, and it has taught me so much about who I am, what drives me. And I realized that I do want to help other people. It's at the service of everything I do. Like, I would love to go make $1 million working in a corporation, but I know I wouldn't be fulfilled. Like, really rolling up my sleeves and walking alongside somebody and helping them in whatever way is really what fulfills me. But sometimes I do it to the extent that I ignore myself. Not only with some of the emotional problems maybe that I'm struggling with at the time, but also my nutrition and my weight. So I've gained a little bit of the weight. that I had lost originally. And so I'm really struggling to get motivated to lose that. But so I spend so much time focusing on other people because I can see the immediate benefit. Mm-hmm. You can always see at a 30,000 foot view what somebody else needs. Just like I'm sure people could come along and say, Chrissy, you need to do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And it would help me. But when you're stuck in it, it's hard to see that sometimes. But I help myself, other people sometimes at the detriment to myself. So mm-hmm. I really try to remember that when you're on an airplane and they talk about the oxygen mask, they say put yours right on first and then put somebody else's on. I need to really start taking that to heart. And I kind of do the bunny hop with it. I'll make two steps of progress forward and then one back. And so I need to just continue to push forward and really put myself first. Because if I want to love other people, if I want to help other people, I have to love myself and help myself first. So true. Otherwise, I'm not whole to help them.
That's so true.
And that's a hard thing for me to remember because my mechanism is, ooh, I don't want to deal with that. So let me go find. It's just like when you're
let doing, me go find someone else to help.
Yeah, it's just like when you're doing something at the house and you're like, oh, I really need to go mow the lawn. But you know what? My laundry needs to be done and I need to play with Marshall and I need to do this first.
What's the priority?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. I feel like a lot of people probably experience that. I'm like on the opposite selfish end of that though. I'm like, let me worry about myself and then help other people.
I think that's what makes human nature so great is we're all different. We all face things differently.
It's so true.
Yeah.
We all deal with our issues differently.
Absolutely.
We all run away from things or hide from things in a different way.
Yep. Everybody has issues, and that's the thing I've learned. And if they say they don't, then they're lying
about
it.
They are lying.
Because there's something.
Well, and people that look like they have it all together, they don't. They have people helping them, and So, how long have you been volunteering for Meals on Wheels?
Oh my goodness. I started Meals on Wheels probably in 2005. I've been doing it maybe 10 or 11 years.
Okay.
So my motivation to get involved with Meals on Wheels is my grandmother. She's called me Doll. She got Meals on Wheels, and there were some days that was her only human interaction was the person delivering those meals.
Okay.
And I feel like it was my way to kind of pay it forward. My dad did Meals on Wheels. He got his employees involved with it. My dad is a huge influence on my service heart. Both my parents instilled values of service, but especially my dad. So when I finally got settled, I had finished my MBA. So maybe it was 2007. I had finished my MBA and had some extra time. I talked to my boss at the time and said, hey, can I take some time during the day to go deliver Meals on Wheels? And he said, absolutely. And a lot of the residents don't want to see you. There's probably some shame in having to accept Meals on Wheels given on their situation or that loss of independence. But there was one guy, Bernard, that loved it. He said the meals sucked. The reason why he got them is for the people. So half the time he would try to convince me to stop somewhere and get him food and come eat with him.
But,
so Bernard, when I first met him, was 90.
Okay.
And he was still riding his bike.
Aww.
Every day, up and down the street. He was sharp as a tack. He used to work for Allison Transmission. He always had some sort of gadget that he was inventing. So one day I came over, he had wood floors, and he had taken a Roomba, and he put a rag on it and sprayed it with Pledge and sent it around the wood floors.
Oh, I think I need to try that.
Yeah. So he always had some little invention, and he was, like I said, sharp as a tack. He remembered every detail. Uh-huh. And so when I started running, he wanted to see pictures from my races, and he wanted to see the medals. And so I always delivered to Bernard last so I could have time to sit. If I had time to eat, I would. If not, at least spend 10-15 minutes talking with him. Mm-hmm. And he would tell me about his story and his wife and his kids and just what his life was like. And he was just so funny. And actually, just probably 2 years ago, they had a big 100th birthday celebration for him and invited all the drivers by.
Aww.
And he had been taken off my route, which was really sad. They changed their routes around, and I almost asked to be changed just to keep him. And then I thought, you know, I'm sure a lot of other people are going to do that, and Meals on Wheels needs drivers so bad. I'm just going to stick. You know, this is happening in my life for some reason, so I'm just going to stick where I am and the route that I'm in. But it was funny because I went back and I hadn't seen him in probably about 2 years, and he still recognized me. He's like, are you still running? And I said, are you still riding your bike? And he said, yes. But at that time, cracks me up, he has this bright blue, like, electric blue bike, and it's a girl's bike, so the bar goes down. But he's got these huge, massive training wheels on it, so he can still ride on his own and not fall.
Uh-huh.
And so he'll ride on the sidewalks to the grocery store to get one thing a day. But it just, you know, killed me. And he's like, I've got a bike just like you. And it was just...
Is he still alive?
You know, I think he is.
Yeah.
I would imagine he had really played such a big part in people's hearts. I'm sure they would let us know.
Yeah, Meals on Wheels passed for sure.
Yeah, but he was just so... It was just such a joy to be able to go. And he was so funny. He'd be like, put a picture of us on FacePlace.
Oh, you need to get him a Facebook account.
And he had this huge, massive TV. It was probably like one of those 72 inches. He had a grandson that was really into technology. So his grandfather, he was set up. He had a camera. He could see when you were coming. So he had this big, massive, like 72-inch TV. And he had me on his web TV log into Facebook to show him pictures from my first half Ironman. So, yeah, he was really funny.
I like, can you do Meals on Wheels if you have like little kids with you?
Yeah. So I think that they'll, I knew some people that had little kids and would take them with them.
See, cause I've always thought about it, and I actually filled out the form one time when I just had Marshall and then I was thinking, I don't know, how do I commit to this? Like juggling nap time. And I'm sure that the people that you said like to
talk, sure they would love to see the boys.
To see little kids.
And whatever.
Yeah.
Hind little threes.
yeah,
I'm sure that they would love that.
Well, yeah, because it's like, I remember being a little kid, and I mean, like you said, your dad instilled like your service heart. I think I get that a lot from my mom when I do things like that. And I remember from when we were really little, she would take us to the nursing home and we would like sing songs and like, we would just go there like once a week, and she knew all the people there. Mm-hmm. And
I could see your mom doing that.
Yeah, you know my mom.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know those old people love seeing the little kids.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that I think makes me the most sad is it wasn't until after both my grandmothers passed and delivering Meals on Wheels that how much that phone call and visit from your family really means to them. God, my poor grandmother used to send me pre-stamped, pre-addressed cards for me to write her when I was a kid.
Oh.
And I still didn't do it you don't...
Uh-huh.
Oh, I don't have time to do that. I've got to go play on my scooter or go to the pool.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, and so it kills me now. There's one guy I go see named Jim. He's so sweet. He's got one of those chairs that lifts up.
Uh-huh.
So it's always really funny to watch the chair lift him up to a standing position. But the poor guy has this open sore on his head that will not heal because he can't quite get to it to clean it. And he relies on his daughter-in-law to come. But he has family that lives in town, and he will go a week or two without seeing them.
And
it makes me so sad, and it breaks my heart. But then it's also, I know how everybody gets into their groove in life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it happens.
I know. Even now, I'm 32, and my mom will still text me when it's my grandpa's birthday. Mm-hmm. Like, make sure you call your grandpa. And usually when I call him, he wants to talk for, like, no more than 1 minute.
Right. Because
he wants to get back to his shows anyway. But it means, I mean, when I called my grandpa on Saturday to tell him happy birthday, he went through every single other person that called him.
Aww.
Like, to tell me who he had heard from. So I was thinking, good thing I called. He's going to report this to somebody else, and they're going to know if I called or not.
Oh, that's funny. It does. It means a lot. And it's something that takes 2 to 3 hours out of a day once a month.
Yeah.
But I know it has an impact on people, and it's just my little way of paying it forward.
So you still do it?
I do.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to talk about anything you're loving right now. Like, what are you really into?
Oh, I just finished the TV show Shameless.
And
I'm so depressed it's over. Well, it's over for the season. So a friend, you know, when you do rides on the trainer in the house, because Indiana weather's so fabulous, it really helps to have something to focus on besides being stuck on the trainer. So a friend had recommended Shameless, and it really lives up to its name.
That's not the dad that rides motorcycles.
It's on Showtime. It's a guy that has 6 kids he's a drunk, and his oldest kid kind of raises everybody.
Are they Irish?
I think so. And they live in Chicago.
Yeah.
And just some of the antics, you're like, oh my gosh, how does this happen in real life? But then the things that you experience and know, you're like, it really does happen
in our life.
I really love that show. It makes me laugh.
It's like when you finish a good book and you're like, what now?
Yeah.
That was what I did every night before I went to bed.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. I got to find a new show. Although I want to start listening to more podcasts.
Okay.
Everybody told me Serial was so good.
Oh,
Keeping Up With Yours and
thanks.
Things like that. So.
Yeah, Serial is definitely that was the first podcast I ever listened to. Mm-hmm. Did you ever listen to it?
I haven't listened to it yet. I just heard people talk about it.
The first one. Listen to the first one season.
Okay.
I never finished the second I probably still will. But yeah, it's hard to find. I still haven't. So the one I listened to, Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey, I'm interviewing her later today. I haven't found another one like that that I love. Mm-hmm. The serial type stuff I really like because it's kind of more you're following a story.
Yeah.
But Jamie's is very much sitting in, listening to girlfriends talk, getting motivated and inspired to do whatever, and kind of like how I mirror my show. Mine's a little bit different. Hers is faith-based. Mine's a little bit more athletic-based. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm still kind of searching for a couple new ones that I love that
it's
I want
hard
to hear every week.
Yeah, that you want to sit there and watch for a couple hours yeah. while you're on the trainer or while you're
Well, and the podcast recovering. Is different because you're not watching yeah. anything. You have to multitask when you listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
Because you can't just sit there and zone out. You feel like you need to be doing something.
It reminds me of the time I tried to download a book to read when I was training for a marathon. I had to review it. Like, I would listen to it, and I'm like, wait a minute. Who are they talking about? Uh-huh. What character? Because my mind just goes yes. a million different directions.
I love reading books on the treadmill, though. Yeah. I just put them on huge, large font. But anyway, whenever I find my next one that I'm really loving, which is part of the reason I created the show in the first place, because I was like, this is what I want. So I'm going to create it.
Yeah, there you go.
But it's not as fun to listen to when it's yourself talking.
Right.
You know? So is there anything you're not loving right now?
Oh, I'm not loving training right now. I've been really struggling. And it's not so much the training itself. It's the carving time out for it. So I've really struggled with life balance my whole life. Like, I go 100 miles an hour one direction. Probably take on way too much. And do too many things. And so I used to take offense when people would be like, you never relax, you never rest. I'm like, why are you getting on me about that? What's wrong
Let
with
me
that?
Do my thing.
And then I started, you know, I had somebody tell me once, they're like, do you think that sitting in a chair doing nothing is productive? And I said, absolutely not. There's a closet upstairs I can go clean up.
Right.
And they're like, no, it's restoring your mind and your body and your spirit. And so this year I've been trying to take that. I had a bike crash in 2015 at the Ironman Augusta course, and it taught me a lot about helping, right? So I want to help people all the time, and I get mad when somebody won't let me help. I'm like, come on, you're juggling 50 different things. I'm offering to help. Let somebody help you. But I was the same way. No, I don't want to take any help, whether it be, you know, emotional or whatever. I don't want to take any help. And so after the accident in Augusta, I broke my collarbone in 4 places and had to have surgery. And it taught me a lot about giving up control. We had an event coming for Back on My Feet, and I was totally incapacitated. I had surgery 2 days before. I was loopy as I'll get out at the event. So I had to give up control over, I have no more input in this event, and it's going to go how it's going to go. And I have the staff that are more than capable of doing it, so I need to let them do it and take the lessons from that. And then it also taught me about allowing people to help me. So I cannot tell you how hard it was to sit on the couch and watch somebody else do my laundry. Like, I got up twice to try to help her cook, and she's like, will you sit down? You just got out of surgery. I want to help. And that taught me such a powerful lesson that people want to help, so let them help.
Yeah.
Let them. It's not about you, I accepted help, or I, you know, feel embarrassed that I needed help. It's allowing somebody else to have the opportunity to help. So that was a good lesson for me, and it kind of taught me about balance. I've got to start being better about balancing. I've got to spend more time at home. I want to save money because racing Ironmans are expensive.
Very, very much so.
So, yeah, I think I have about $2,000 in entry fees
this year already.
So, you know, I need to save money. I need to be disciplined, have some balance, find some zen in my life, so to speak. And so I adopted a puppy. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, yeah, I was going to bring that up, Boyd.
Yeah, I adopted a boxer rescue.
That is a lot of work.
So he's
and
a year.
Boxers are high energy.
He's a year old, and the reason why I've been thinking about getting a boxer rescue, I'd wanted one for a while, but I was like, I'm going back to Arizona this year to kind of get the official finish. I went back in 2014.
Oh, you are? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, I went back in 2014, was totally trained well, took 15 minutes off my swim time, and the bike, it was like 25 to 30 mile per hour headwinds on the bike, and I mean, it was just dreadful. So it took me longer on the bike, and then I was dehydrated. And so about mile 11 of the run, I realized I hadn't peed since mile 50 of the bike, and I was toxic at that point. So I was like, you know what? I've done the whole let's finish
You've
at 1
it.
O'clock
yeah.
in the morning, keeping my family out here, so I'm just going to call it a day. So I knew I wasn't going to go back in 2015, but I wanted to go back this year.
Okay, so that's in November?
Mm-hmm, November 20th.
Okay,
so
this is going to be a big summer.
Yeah, so I didn't really want to get a dog before this, but he came along, and he had been left on a porch November, December, January. in rural Indiana with no food. He was left on an abandoned house, and somebody was coming and feeding him once a week. And he's very well trained. He's housebroken.
Oh,
he's crate trained.
That's huge.
He knows everything. I can't understand why somebody would get rid of him. He's not even that hyper for a boxer.
Right.
But he has terrible separation anxiety.
Oh.
So he's probably
because he was on a porch by
himself. It was his third house in 2 months, and I just officially adopted him this weekend, and he's probably sitting in the crate with saliva everywhere, mm-hmm. going, "Where's my mom? She's never coming back." But he's actually taught me a lot about priorities. So the last month has been a jumble to my training because I don't want to leave him. I can't leave him in the car for that long. So this morning I actually started back. I went to the run. I hadn't been to a back of my feet run in a while. For some bash and grant stuff and some new schedule with dog stuff. And so I got back to the run this morning, and it's amazing how much better my soul felt.
I bet.
Getting up and starting my day right, starting with a group of people that really have drive and determination and want to better their situation, and then getting back into training. So today kind of starts the new...
Fresh start. It's Monday.
Yeah, I put 2 blog posts out over the weekend that were both very cleansing to my soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it talked about helping. Well, I need to let people help me again.
So true.
There's people that want to support me through these challenges that I'm having. So it starts today. So I'm back in love with training again.
Yay!
Or so I say. I'm going to tell
now.
Myself.
Starting today.
Fake it till you make it sometimes.
Well, if it makes you feel... I don't know if this will make you feel good or make you feel more like you're saying you do too much. But you're the kind of person where I feel like even if you're not one of my best friends, I honestly feel like I would feel comfortable calling you or texting you in the middle of the night if I needed help.
Oh, that's so sweet. I'm glad that you feel that way. I'm like gonna cry saying that, but it's true.
Because
I totally
people,
would.
You know, there are a few people in life that you just feel like, she's an awesome person. Like, she would help me.
Oh, that's so awesome to hear, Lindsay.
I'm gonna cry saying that.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you feel that way.
I do. And, you know, I think that a lot of people in your life probably feel that way.
And I need to remember that. Because sometimes when I get down, I feel isolated. And then I crave that isolation. And it's like, why? Why? You know, and sometimes it's because people don't react the way I need them to at the time. Like, maybe they're not really paying attention to what I'm grieving about, or mm-hmm. you know, things like that. And so that dismissive, they're not meaning to be dismissive, maybe they've got somebody in their office or something going on,
right?
But I take it the wrong way. And so
right, or like maybe you're like talking and someone like me, and there's a kid that's like screaming at my feet and I want to give you my attention, and then I feel bad, you know, 20 minutes later. But no, I've always thought that, and it's so true too. There are people in your life that are you would consider yourself closer to
mm-hmm.
that you wouldn't feel that way about. And that's just a testament of your character too, that you feel that way about someone. We're not best friends.
No, we don't talk all that often.
We'll go 3 months without talking but we see each other at events and stuff, but it's so true. Okay, so favorite book you've recently read?
I've read a book.
When you've had time.
Oh gosh.
What about concerts? Have you been into any good concerts?
Well, you know, I'm obsessed with Dave Matthews
Band. Oh, that's right. You're one of those.
Yeah. So actually, Boyd, my dog, is named after Boyd Tinsley, the violinist.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And he's got a little Dave Matthews Flame Dancer dog tag coming.
Oh, cute.
With his information on it in the mail.
Cute.
So I'm looking forward to going to 2 Dave concerts this summer. Before they go off tour hiatus for the year.
Okay.
There's been like 50 shows that have come through that have just been, I want to go. The problem is like I've really committed to not spending money and trying to get my finances under control.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I've got to, if I don't say no to this one, then I won't say no to the next one. And
you'll get hooked.
I think I got concert tickets to Tedeschi truck bands on Groupon.
Okay.
So that's
when is
I
that,
felt.
This summer?
July, I think.
Is it at the White River?
Yeah.
See, that is my all-time favorite venue.
It's the best venue.
It is. I will not go to a concert at Klipsch because I can't stand how big it is. Unless I have the adult... actual seats.
Yeah.
I don't want to be back there.
I will only get Pavilion at Klipsch.
Yeah, I don't want to deal with it. And what if it's rainy or what if it's muddy? And plus, just getting out of there. I mean, it's a nightmare.
Luckily, living up by there, I've kind of got the tricks that I know in and out. But
yeah.
So for Dave Matthews, I have one good friend that I met through triathlon that I always go Friday night with. And we go all out and get crazy. And so we got pavilion tickets for that. And then the next night I bring my best friend Brian and she brings her husband.
Oh, fun.
And we always get tickets too because we're all like, we're too old to sit and deal with that bullshit. But this year we couldn't get tickets. We tried through the warehouse, couldn't get them, tried through the pre-sale, couldn't get them, tried through regular sale. So we are actually in Lawn for Saturday night. That's how bad we love Dave Matthews.
That's how much you
want
to go.
And it's funny because Back of My Feet has an event with the Indians that night. It's Star Wars night. We're the beneficiary. So I have to go down there and then...
You have to make an appearance.
Go up to the concert. Luckily, the guy at the Indians was totally cool. He was like, I get it. Just be there for, you know, certain parts. So we're going to get there early enough. Well, my friends are to get first row in the lawn. So we can just ignore everything back.
And if you have a small enough group, like, you can mosey your way, depending on the kind of concert it is, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, fun, fun. Okay, well, this has been great.
Yeah, thank you so much. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you. And I'm sure that I will see you around Indianapolis soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lindsay.
All right, everybody, that wraps up episode 10. Thank you so much, Chrissy. Everything we talked about today will be on the show notes. You can find them on my website, lindseyhine.com. Everything will be there. The links to Chrissy's TED Talk, the links to Back of My Feet, everything we talked about is on there. Thank you guys so much for listening. I am having so much fun with this, and every time somebody tweets me or Instagrams me or leaves me a review on iTunes, it just makes me so happy that people are actually genuinely enjoying the show. So I appreciate all of your support so far. And I want to say a big thank you to my sister Erica, my sister Shelby, my friend Brittany, and my friend Sarah, who all were my biggest cheerleaders from the start and really encouraged me to get this thing started. Having so much fun, and we're going to keep on going. So next week is episode 11, and be talking with Sarah Hall. I had a great conversation with her and I can't wait to get that episode out to you. You are gonna love it. Thank you guys so much. Have a wonderful weekend.